Facebook shares opened down 20% on Thursday, the steepest one-day fall in the company's history, and it's taking the NASDAQ down with it. The drop follows a dismal forecast from Facebook executives, who said profit margins would plummet for several years due to the cost of improving privacy safeguards following the massive Cambridge Analytica scandal. Other big tech stocks like Amazon, Netflix, and Google, as well as Facebook competitors Twitter and Snapchat, all falling after the report.
Shares of General Motors down more than 7% after warning that President Trump's tariffs are cutting into profits. The nation's largest automaker lowering its earning outlook for 2018, citing higher prices for steel and aluminum. And there's not much relief down the road, with the company saying it anticipates headwinds will continue through 2018.
U.S. chip giant Qualcomm has called off a multi-billion dollar deal to buy a Dutch chipmaker after lengthy delays by Chinese regulators to approve the transaction. The $44 billion deal to buy NXP Semiconductors fell over after Qualcomm said it assumed there would be no last-minute approval from China. Analysts said China appeared to be holding off approval to gain leverage in an escalating trade conflict over tariffs between Beijing and Washington.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It is July 27th, 5:11 in the morning. Here we are with another edition of The Opening Bell, and thank you for tuning in this morning to another edition of The Opening Bell and also another business day getting underway. We'll have the intel from the markets in just a second. Paul Nolte is here today. From Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago, we're going to be talking about the economy and our portfolios. A little bit later in the program, Brian Summers is here. Our regular Friday guests are here today. Brian from Skift.com with some news about JetBlue and perhaps some more legroom or maybe less legroom on JetBlue. That'll be at about 5:40 this morning. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are mixed to flat this morning, with the Dow futures up 13 points. NASDAQ is improving, up about 24 points. That's good for a third. S&P futures are higher by just a couple of points, which is just a fraction. Markets around the globe generally higher in Europe, with the FTSE, the DAX, and the CAC all higher by about a quarter to a half a percent. And in Asia, markets are generally higher, with the Nikkei going to end the day up about a half a percent. 125 points. Oil is trading at $69.41 a barrel, which is down about 20 cents. A couple of stories that we're watching for you. We're going to get into the Facebook story momentarily. You heard it there in the opening montage. Facebook reeling after experiencing its worst trading day since going public in 2012. Market value of the social media giant plummeting almost $120 billion. That's about 20% less. With too many factories making slow-selling cars, General Motors can't afford to keep them all operating without making some tough decisions. A possible scenario, analysts say, is to close its sprawling Lordstown plant in northeastern Ohio because the compact car it makes there is also built in Mexico. The once-bustling factory already has lost two of its three shifts and 3,000 union jobs since the beginning of last year. And as you also heard in the montage there, General Motors, with its guidance for the year, worried that tariffs are taking a toll. Yesterday, talks with the president, earlier this week, I should say, talks with the president and the European Union seemed to produce some common ground, but nothing in the way of a firm agreement, except for soybeans, more farmers' markets opening up in Europe. And the Chinese government says Qualcomm has failed to resolve China's anti-monopoly concerns about its proposed acquisition of NXP Semiconductors, in a case that analysts warned could worsen escalating U.S.-Chinese tensions over technology. That development coming late yesterday. Let's begin with Paul Nolte this morning from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul's one of our regular guests here on Friday. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be with you.
Let's start with Facebook. I hope you got my order to sell earlier this week, all of my shares.
I was hitting the like button a ton yesterday, and it didn't seem to have any impact on the stock price. It was interesting because I think a lot of this had been forewarned, if you will, when Mark Zuckerberg was in front of Congress earlier this year talking about the issues of the fake news and whatever else was going on with Facebook. And they were talking about hiring an awful lot more people and kind of ramping down some of their growth projections and how they were going to be handling it. As he said, he wanted to have more of a community within Facebook and not just growth for growth's sake. So I think a lot of this was forewarned, if you will, by some of those comments earlier.
If we have Facebook in our portfolios, how badly are we hurting?
Not too bad, actually. Really what it does is it takes it back to the beginning of the year. So, you know, all of the loss that we saw yesterday, 20%, puts the stock right back where it was the beginning of the year. What's interesting, though, is if you take a look at the value of Facebook, so what was lost in market value yesterday, you talked,
$120 billion.
Yeah. You could buy the entire McDonald's operation or the entire Nike company with $120 billion. So that's how big, as in market value, Facebook is, as well as some of the other FANG stocks relative to the rest of the market.
Do you pull those out of the portfolio now, or are you going to leave them where they are?
We've got it in some of the portfolios where we have individual stocks, and I think we're going to kind of leave it as it is. They've got some other parts of their company that are actually doing very well, and it's going to turn to those parts of the company that are going to be really drivers. And when you look at mutual funds, those that have growth as part of their name, so a large-cap growth portfolio or a large-cap growth mutual fund, will have Facebook in it. So you probably saw a little bit of a hiccup yesterday to maybe, you know, anywhere between 1 and 1.5% decline, depending upon how much Facebook they owned.
Things seem to be improving for Facebook this morning in the pre-market. They're up about 2% at 178.90 a share. Those other FANG stocks took a hit as well. And the NASDAQ is going to apparently do a little bit better today by early indications.
And that's coming off of Amazon's earnings last night, and Amazon killed it. They'd had a great revenue growth number. Their earnings were twice what was estimated. They earned $5 for the quarter. So they seem to be doing very well at this point. And we have Apple due up early next week, and that'll wrap things up for the FANG group.
Anything else in earnings that you saw that concerned you this week?
It's interesting, and you highlighted General Motors. We've heard from a variety of companies about the tariff impacts. Some are getting hit more than others, depending upon what their context of steel and aluminum in their products might be. Whirlpool is another one. So we're seeing a lot of comments from companies about the tariffs and warning and guiding Wall Street down in a lot of cases, saying, you know, earnings are going to be impacted by tariffs. We don't know how much because not all the tariffs have been rolled out. We don't know when it's going to happen. But in general, you heard from a lot of CEOs and CFOs all saying, you know, we're really not a big fan of these tariffs, but it's going to have an impact on our business. So we would expect to see some of the impact showing up in the third quarter numbers, which will be in October, or fourth quarter, which will be January of next year.
Merck and Company, Twitter, ExxonMobil, among the big companies reporting earnings today. Paul, hang on. We're going to take a quick break here and continue with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It's 523. We're on with Paul Nolte this morning from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, on the economic calendar today, GDP numbers out. What is the estimate here that we may be thinking we might see?
Well, we're going to see something probably north of 4%, and that's the fastest economic growth that we've seen in years. We've had, I think, maybe one quarter where it was 5% since the recession. So, and that's a combination of the tax cut and some additional spending that's been going on. We've seen a real pickup in economic activity. But the thought is that this is going to be kind of a sugar high. So they see this being rolled back because the tax cuts actually are not permanent. So there's a possibility those get rolled back in 2020, and we could see we'll see the benefit of the tax cut as well as the budget act that was passed probably wearing off early part next year. So that is going to go away, and we're back to, again, the long-run economic growth that we've been experiencing of about 2-2.5% or so.
When you say the spending from the tax cut, are you referring to businesses spending or who's?
Yeah, no, it's primarily business spending. It is consumer. We're seeing the consumer certainly spend. Retail sales have been up, and oddly, well, maybe not oddly enough, but we are seeing an increase in consumer debt. You know, so
right.
As we've talked about with wages, and we'll talk about that probably next week as we get to the employment numbers, but wage growth is pretty much in line with inflation. So if I want to spend more, I have to borrow to do it. And credit card debt and personal loan debt is actually up significantly. It's up almost threefold from 2013. So consumers have taken on an awful lot of debt over the last 3-4 years to maintain spending.
Couldn't the argument be made that people are spending their debt and not the tax cut?
Well, yeah, and the thought is, too, certainly from the personal perspective that, you know, I'm going to wind up with either a bigger tax refund or I'm taking home more money because of the tax cut. So I'm just going to go into debt.
Right.
And I'll worry about it later, and yeah, I'll pick it up with the bigger income.
I saw one, and even the occupant of Pennsylvania Avenue said maybe we could get 5.3%. Higher than 5%, is that a likelihood?
The range for this quarter are huge, unlike other quarters where it's a pretty tight range. And inventories have gotten drawn down, so that means that's actually a drag on GDP. Trade is a drag on GDP as well. So there's a couple things that may pull it down a little bit. But we could see a 5 number. Like I said, the range is huge this quarter, so it's not quite sure how we're all going to shake out yet. And it'll get revised 2 more times, We'll forget about that, but it'll get revised 2 more times. So by the end of the year, we'll actually know what this quarter's growth was.
Right, and GDP is the one that always gets revised.
It does.
Seems like it always gets revised downward.
And it gets revised. By the time it gets the final revision at the end of the year, people are like, oh, second quarter? Well, we're not even worried about it anymore.
One of the other data points this week was the new home sales. I was surprised to see that down considerably.
It is, and there's a couple of dynamics that are going on. One is home building is not as robust as many would expect. So there's a demand for housing right now that's coming from household formations. There's a lot more household formations. So the argument might be that not everybody's going to live in mom and dad's basement anymore. They're actually going out because they have good jobs, going out and trying to buy a house, and there's really not a lot for sale. So the inventory levels are down a fair amount. And you're seeing a lot of cash buyers, which is a surprise here, too. So the housing, one of the solutions would be, obviously, to build more houses, but there's not a ton of space. And we notice it here in Chicago, certainly. You look out the windows and you see all kinds of cranes up. There's a lot of building that are going on, but it's going to take a while for that to hit the market.
Yeah, and then the plans for the Lincoln Yards up here with thousands of units of housing coming.
Right. So that's what I said. I mean, they're working on it, but there's a lag to try to get all the units up so that we can fulfill all the buyers' needs.
So what should we do with our portfolios here at the end of the week? Just sit and watch closely?
Enjoy the Wall Street show.
Right.
And that's one of the interesting things, too, when you're taking a look at how the market reacts here. Yesterday was incredible. You had the Dow up over 100 points, and you had the NASDAQ down over 1 percentage point, and the S&P somewhere in the middle. So you have these days where it's really focused on individual companies. It's not just a broad market move. But even with that and the reaction that we're seeing this morning, the markets have a relatively strong underpinning. There's, you know, you'd expect Facebook to really knock down the market, and it really hasn't outside of Facebook. So there is some underlying strength in the markets that I think can continue for maybe another few months or so before we start looking at the midterm elections in November. So we still do like the equity markets. We're a little bit nervous longer term because valuations are still high. Interest rates have picked up here, so you're getting some good value from interest rates. You're finally getting paid on cash. So a good balance between both stocks and bonds, I think, will allow you to sleep at night with the days like yesterday when you get one or two stocks that are really moving the market in your portfolio.
Paul, if people want this wonderful advice personally, how can they get in touch with you?
They can drop me an email at pnolte@kingsviewam.com.
P Nolte at kingsviewam.com.
Yes.
We will see you again next Friday. Thanks for coming in.
Absolutely. Look forward to it. Thanks.
Paul Nolte at Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Kingsview.com, too, is the website if you want to head over there.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Betsy Ziegler, the newly appointed CEO of Chicago Tech Incubator 1871, said her top priorities at the new job are to form partnerships with other tech hubs on the city's south and west sides and to enhance Chicago's profile as a tech hub on a national level. 1871's previous CEO, Howard Tolman, stepped down from the company last spring. And Busbank, a Chicago charter bus company that helps businesses book trips, has acquired New York startup Buster to help increase the company's tech offerings. Buster's digital platform makes booking buses, shuttles, and vans as easy as hailing an Uber. That's today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio. Learn more from ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Some news involving JetBlue and Mesa Airlines this morning. Brian Summers is airline business reporter for skift.com. And is with us via Skype this morning. Brian, let's begin with Mesa Airlines. What's happening with that airline?
Yeah, Mesa Airlines, or more specifically Mesa Air Group, is a company that probably very few passengers have heard of. But a lot of folks have flown it, maybe not in Chicago, but elsewhere. It's one of those regional airlines that flies as United Express and American Eagle. And like a lot of airlines, about a decade ago, a little less in their case, they filed for bankruptcy. They had the wrong type of planes. They had too many 50-seat jets. They had too many turboprops. They weren't making any money. So they go ahead and they file for bankruptcy. They come out as a more nimble company. It turns out that they've been profitable the last couple of years. And guess what? They want to go public again. It's certainly their right, right? That's something that we can do in the United States. We have pretty friendly bankruptcy laws. But I think it's interesting to all of us who cover it that Mesa Air Group wants to go public again.
Yeah, there's a couple of questions. And I think the first is, does this speak to anything larger in terms of the health of the airline industry?
Yeah, the airline industry is, of course, a lot healthier than it was 8 or 10 years ago. And, you know, it's easy to forget, of course, that I'm giving Mesa Air Group a hard time for wanting to go public again. But United, Delta, American, they all filed for bankruptcy and they immediately became public companies again. So Mesa has taken about an 8-year hiatus from being public. They say they're making money. They say the business is sustainable. They say that they can grow the business. They do admit one thing that a lot of people aren't going to be surprised by. They're having a little bit of trouble finding pilots. People who follow this closely know that there may or may not be a pilot shortage. There are just too few people in their early 20s right now that want to be airline pilots because it doesn't pay that well, at least at the lower levels. And perhaps more importantly, you know, people that got into this industry 10 or 20 years ago, they got into it, they were excited, they were happy to be pilots, and guess what happened? They got furloughed or they got laid off or their companies went out of business. And so it's really hard to persuade young pilots that this time is different. And if they go spend a fortune on their training and they get an airline job, they're not going to be furloughed in 7 years.
What is the competition like in this space? And are there other publicly traded regional airlines?
There is one other publicly traded regional airline. It's called SkyWest, Inc. They're based in Utah. They keep a pretty low profile. Investors tend to like them. I think their stock is up for the year, which is more than we can say for some of the bigger airlines. But generally, profit margins are okay at these regional airlines, but they're just smaller companies, so they're producing a lot less cash than, say, a big airline.
So what would the time frame be for whether or not we see this IPO go forward?
To be honest, I have no idea, but it's a space that we can watch over the coming months.
Let's talk about JetBlue Airlines, cutting costs, maintaining their margins. Fuel costs still stressful for a lot of the airlines. Is JetBlue one of them?
Yeah, you know, JetBlue is an interesting story because they're a pretty well-known airline, even a place like Chicago where they don't fly that much, especially in New York and Boston. People like them. They have a great reputation. The problem for JetBlue is that they're actually the sixth largest U.S. airline right now. They're behind Alaska Airlines and then the Big Four. That's a tough place to be in. You don't really want to be number six. You want to have the same scale as the bigger airlines. They're just so much smaller, and that's hard because their margins are below their peer airlines, and it's not quite clear what JetBlue is going to do. We're sort of guessing that they're going to try to grow the airline as much as they can, and they have said that they're trying to cut costs. The airline last week said sort of quietly that they are going to get rid of some jobs as part of a goal to save $300 million in non-fuel costs by 2020. It's a great idea, right? Non-fuel costs is something that airlines can control. Fuel costs are not controllable, but if fuel costs go up by too much, JetBlue is going to be one of those airlines that could be in some trouble.
You know, it's interesting. You write. You mentioned earlier about how they always seem to do well with customers. Is part of that what they're doing with their older aircraft and retrofitting them?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, Steve, because yes, JetBlue is retrofitting all of their older aircraft from the early 2000s. If you've been on them recently, you've probably seen they have those really old TV screens that probably seemed incredibly amazing and futuristic in 2002. Now they just look ridiculous. So it's 2018. JetBlue is retrofitting the aircraft. They're going to look brand new. But guess what's going to happen, Steve, as they do that? Even JetBlue is shrinking some legroom on these aircraft, I think, by an inch or two per seat. They're sort of betting you're not going to notice because the airplane is going to look so much better than it did, and they already offer the most legroom in the industry. They still will. It just won't be by as much.
And new leather seats and high-definition televisions.
Exactly. Yeah. So hopefully those will look pretty good until about 15 years from now when they look dated.
One of the other cool stories you have about JetBlue is how they want more diversity in their ranks. And the first female president is kind of leading that charge.
Yeah, I think that we've talked about this before. It's kind of insane, the airline industry, how few women and people of color there are, especially at the highest levels. You know, not at the airport, not at the airplanes, but at headquarters. And JetBlue has a new president, as you mentioned. She's a woman, as far as anybody can tell. She is the first president of a larger U.S. airline in at least 10 years. And look, I mean, her job is to do what we just talked about, right, to make the airline more profitable. But second to that, she told me that, look, you know, we need more women in important meetings at the airline. We need them at the highest levels. And there's nothing at an airline that a woman couldn't do as well as a man. So let's get more women running airlines. I think that's a noble goal. It's just hard to do.
One of your other stories involves these big aircraft that are retired. Generally, they just kind of go off into the sunset. But you've written about, or your colleagues have written about, some of these jets that are getting a new life.
Yeah, I think you're specifically talking about the Airbus A380. Passengers love it. It has two decks. It looks really cool. It has four engines. It hasn't quite gone for Airbus as Airbus had wanted it to. So 10 years ago, Airbus introduced the aircraft. It was going to revolutionize airlines. It's pretty much a niche aircraft now. It works very well in places like London, where you just want to shuttle as many passengers through on one aircraft as you can. Everybody knows that the U.S. airlines haven't bought that airplane. The U.S. airlines, I'm willing to predict, will never buy that airplane. It's just the way it is. And usually, an aircraft will have a second life after its first operator retires it. So in this case, Singapore Airlines was one of the first airlines to operate the A380, and they said, especially for their early builds, the ones that came out about 10 years ago, they weren't going to fly them anymore. There's really very little appetite for secondhand A380s, but as you mentioned, there is one charter operator called HiFly that's going to give these airplanes a go and fly them as charters. So people might end up on a charter airplane at some point that is an A380.
I had always heard that the A380 was one of the most reliable of the aircraft from Airbus, one of the most reliable in the skies. But the story is kind of surprising that it was actually an embarrassment for the company.
Yeah, I don't know if it was an embarrassment for the company, but it certainly hasn't gone as well as it could. I mean, one of the very basic things to look at with that airplane is it has four engines. Almost every other airplane right now has two engines, the Boeing 777, the Airbus A350. It's expensive to operate an airplane with four engines. In the Airbus A380's case, it works out okay, as I understand it, if you fill every seat, so if you sell 500 seats. But there's just very few routes that have that sort of demand. And so for a lot of routes, it's just, as we say in the industry, too much airplane.
Brian, always good chatting with you. We'll see you again next week.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers is airline business reporter for Skift.com. That's Skift on Twitter, at Skift. And you can follow Brian, too, on Twitter at Brian Summers. And make sure you sign up for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report delivered to your inbox, skift.com/airline.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are up about 30. NASDAQ futures are in the green as well, up about 25 points. That's good for about a third. Let's bring in Orion Samuelson this morning for more on markets, especially agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning to you, Steve. It has been quite a week on the trade front with all sorts of activity happening. We're starting with the $12 billion aid package that President Trump announced early in the week on Tuesday to help farmers who are impacted by the trade war situation that we have going on. But then the next day after he made that announcement, he met with the trade negotiator for the European Union, because we still have issues with the European Union on some of the exports of agricultural products. Met with that representative and came away saying we're going to cut the retaliation and the trade war situation with the European Union. And then Secretary of Commerce Wilbur Ross jumped into it, saying, and agriculture and agricultural products will be a main consideration in that ongoing negotiation. And then NAFTA, the Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue, said he's looking forward to wrapping up the NAFTA agreement or re-agreement by September. So all sorts of activity on the trade front. And meanwhile, crops continue in pretty good shape, Steve, across the corn and soybean growing sections of the country. A few drought spots that are serious, but not all that large. So we've had a busy week on the trade front.
The $12 billion aid package, I know the couple of farm groups, the Illinois Farm Bureau among them, were happy to see that come, but said they were concerned it's not going to make farmers whole. Have you been able to find any more reaction to this week? Is that generally the feeling among farmers?
I would say that's generally the feeling among farmers and their organizations, because the chairwoman of the Illinois Soybean Association, her statement was, we appreciate the recognition by the administration that agriculture has had 5 years of dropping prices, and we welcome that. But we prefer trade rather than aid. And a lot of the farm groups in their reaction said, get rid of the trade war situation and let us go back to a marketplace that will not have the trade confrontations. And that's how we want to make our money. Rich Gebert, who is president of the Illinois Farm Bureau, pretty much said the same thing. Farmers would much rather make their living off markets and trade than they would off aid. So I guess the best way to sum it up, the reaction from a lot of farm groups is trade, not aid. So they urge the Trump administration to keep working on settling down this trade situation.
And you mentioned the situation, at least the two sides of Europe and the United States, seem to be easing their rhetoric a little bit. We need to see that with China, too, or some movement with China, because that's an important market for farmers.
Oh, it is. And there are some trade issues with the European Union on technology and that sort of thing and what they allow coming into the European Union. So, that was welcome news by, I think, agricultural groups that they're really going to go to work on that. And the president was very optimistic that trade difference would calm down considerably. So I'd say pretty good progress on that front. Can I mention one thing this morning?
Absolutely.
Can I extend the invitation that we've been talking about this week? This afternoon at 3 o'clock, I'm going to work with David Hochberg, and we're going to hold a free seminar on reverse loan mortgages. And that'll start at 3, go until about 5 this afternoon at Jameson's in Huntley Sun City. And we're looking forward to being there and greeting a lot of our listeners to talk about, with somebody who is very knowledgeable, the reverse loan mortgage and how to use it. So we'll see you all at 3 o'clock this afternoon at Jameson's in Huntley.
All right, Orion, have a great weekend.
You too.
Orion Samuelson with us this morning. Make sure you listen to The Morning Show, too, bright and early tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, July 27th. Commerce Department releases U.S. economic growth figures for the April to June quarter this morning. Economists forecast they will show the economy expanded at a 4.1% annual rate. That's according to data provider FactSet. Some analysts have said the GDP figure could reach as high as 5%. Some companies reporting earnings today, some big companies, including Merck & Company, Twitter, ExxonMobil. We'll also get a report on consumer sentiment, just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, July the 27th.